In this episode of the Macworld Podcast, we're diving into the latest updates to Apple's operating systems, iOS 16 and macOS Ventura. And we'll also talk about the new Apple Pay Later program and Apple Music Classical. That's all in this show. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Macworld Podcast. I'm Roman Loyola here with Jason Cross.
Good morning.
And Michael Simon.
Hello, sir.
Apple on Monday released iOS and iPadOS 16.4. And while it doesn't have any attention-grabbing features, unless you're really into emojis.
Everyone's into emojis.
Who's not into emojis? Well, it does have some stuff that make it a priority to download and install. So to kick this off, I guess I'll ask Jason, what's the main reason for why folks should update to iOS 16.4 as soon as they can?
Well, there's always security stuff that's always important. But there's the emoji, like you mentioned, the emojis. Well,
it is. We all use them every day.
Yeah, the other two things, there's a bunch of little stuff like voiceover support in the weather app and stuff. But the two other big things that people will notice is push notifications for websites that you add to home screen. It's not quite like it is on the Mac. On the Mac, you can get web push notifications for any website. On iPhone and iPad, it is not any website you visit in Safari. You have to add it to home screen, and then you'll get the full notification support, like the little badge on it and push notifications and stuff like that. There are some websites and web apps where that's useful. The other one is architecture upgrade for the home thing is back. It launched for like 2 days back in like iOS 16.2, and then they pulled it because people were having problems updating. And it's back now. So after you update, you can go into the home app, tap the little three-dot menu in the top and choose your home settings. And there'll be a banner up top if it's ready to update. And you just have to update all of your stuff at once. Just update all of your whatever iPhones and iPads and Apple TVs that are connected to your home. Just make sure you update your OS on all those things.
Yeah, that was back in 16.2 in December when they pulled that. So it's been a few months. If you previously updated, it shouldn't.
Yeah, it won't even be there. And it worked for me. Like, yeah, it seemed fine.
And I have a bunch of devices and things. And it was apparently a problem with sharing initially is what I guess when it started becoming an issue. And I guess that was widespread enough where they pulled it in, like I said, 3 months. So 16.3 came out, wasn't in that, and now it's at 16.4. So, but it is important. It will speed up things. We're kind of on that cusp of the home stuff. Like we've been here for a while, it seems, but we're right on that cusp where like things are going to start integrating nicely with each other, and you don't have to worry about, I got to buy this device because I have Alexa. I got to buy this device because I have Google Assistant. Like, it's all going to work. And this is kind of a precursor to that.
Yes and no. Like, that's Matter is what you're talking about.
Right.
The new standard. That standard was introduced back in iOS 16 or 16.1 and doesn't have anything necessarily to do with this home architecture upgrade. This home architecture upgrade is not support for Matter. That's been there. This is separate from that. It's just they reworked all of the stuff under the hood for the home app and HomeKit just to make it faster and more reliable.
Yeah, right. That was a clunky explanation, but what I was saying is that they kind of retooled the under the hood stuff as this becomes more of a thing that more people are going to start using.
Yeah, hopefully. And if you're one of those people who, like me, who would sometimes give it a command to say, turn on the lights in a certain room. And for some reason, it took like 4 or 5 seconds, just long enough that you started to give it the command again and the lights came on. You'd be stupid. Like, it's been really snappy since I did my update. I don't know if that's necessarily because of the update or, you know, maybe it's an update to the Hue app. They're doing firmware updates and stuff all the time. You can never tell.
Yeah, so that's out. macOS 13.3 also came out, the same emojis. Probably the most important thing, like Jason said, is the security fixes. There were a ton.
I think it was 30 of them for the three devices. Nothing, I mean, we're just going based on those little tiny descriptions. but it didn't seem like anything like super alarming where it, like, you look for those words actively exploited in the wild. Like, there's none of that. But there are a couple of things, like the find my app had an exploit that was fixed. Shortcuts had an exploit that was fixed. So, you know, there's some important stuff in there. It's always good, particularly now, like iOS 16 is plenty stable. So when an update comes along, you know, hit that button, update it, and move on.
We should mention that if you have a really old Apple device that can't get iOS 16, there was a little point release for iOS 15 for that, just those security updates for older devices that can't get iOS 16.
That's also true for older versions of macOS. They updated macOS Monterey and macOS Big Sur with the same security updates. Ventura has a trackpad fix that might be important. Other than that, everything else is kind of a minor update.
I kind of miss the days, Roman. You're a Mac person. Like, they're used to, like, now it's like an iPhone thing. Like, update day is for the iPhone, and oh yeah, there's also a Mac release. But there used to be, like, it used to be just as good, where you got, you know, this new feature here and there or something. Now it's just like, security, we fixed this thing, and here's this feature you're probably not going to use. Oh, and there's new emoji.
It's been like that for a while. So we know where Apple makes its money.
Yeah, that's right.
We're recording this on Tuesday. Apple released two new services on...
One and a half, we'll say.
One and a half, yeah. Okay. Well, that's true. Apple Music Classical, is it fair to call that a new service or not? Or
yeah,
either
I think
of them new service?
Yeah, it's a whole new app.
It's a separate app.
So Apple released Apple Music Classical. This was a couple of years ago, Apple acquired... Now, I can't remember the name of the company.
Primephonic.
That's right. They specialized in streaming classical music. And that was a couple of years ago, and it took them a while, but they finally came out. Apple came out with its own version of that. I am not into classical music, so I know there are a lot of nuances involved when listening to classical music. I am not that familiar. Are either of you guys classical music aficionados?
Not an aficionado, but I know enough about it to know why these are important to people who care. Yeah, they bought Primephonic back in August of 2021 and said, next year we're going to have our own experience, and they've been late. So Apple Music Classical, you just need an Apple Music subscription. It's not a separate sub, but it doesn't work with the voice sub. And the main thing with classical music is people care about the composer, where they don't care about the composer for modern music. They just care about the performer. And there are many, many recordings of the same piece of music. Like Beethoven's Fifth has been recorded by many orchestras many times over the years. So which recording it is, which performance it is, matters. And that kind of stuff doesn't matter on regular traditional music. So the entire way you want to look for, and to some degree, the instrument matters. Although I guess you could say there's a lot of playlists for like that kind of stuff on modern music. Guitar playlists and drum playlists and stuff like that. But like, you know, a violin concerto, a piano thing, stuff like that. So the entire organizational method for classical music has to be different in order to serve people's needs, because they're looking for a specific composer or a specific recording of Beethoven's Fifth or whatever. So that's really what Apple Music Classical is giving you. And they also have, they do the stuff they do on regular Apple Music with, they've got high-res music, they've got the surround stuff, spatial audio and everything. I think your playlists will sync to regular Apple Music because that music is in there, but only if it's in a way that Apple Music can already organize stuff. You can't sort by composer and then save a playlist. Like that'll save in Apple Music Classical, but it won't sync over to Apple Music because they don't have that.
Albums, playlists, and tracks added to Apple Music Classical will appear in your regular full Apple Music library, but the recordings, works, and composers won't, because that's the point of that separate app. I'm not a classical musical guy at all. I'll admit I know very little, if anything, about it, but I downloaded it because, you know, it's the job. It feels a lot faster. Like, it's a weird thing, but it feels way quicker than Apple Music. Maybe it's because it's less music to work with. I don't know. Like, Apple Music isn't slow, but it's a little bit slower than some of the other apps you use on your iPhone. This one, Apple Music Classical, was extremely quick. Playing songs was like instantaneous. Jumping into albums was instantaneous. Again, maybe it's just because the matter of the that there's not 70 million songs to negotiate there. I don't know.
From a app speed standpoint, I don't think there's a huge difference between 10 million and 100 million tracks. It's not like they all live on your phone. I do think part of the difference is Apple Music has all of the personalized playlist stuff. It has the For You stuff where it's got, you know, your personal radio station and your favorites mix and all those kinds of things that are algorithmically your get up mix and chill mix and all those things. Apple Music Classical is not doing any of that. It's just a different way to browse a catalog. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe part of what makes Apple Music slower is it's doing more data collection and building personalized stuff for you, whereas Apple Music Classical is just browsing the library. And they promote some stuff, but that just comes from the web. That's not all based on your listening habits and all that stuff.
There's also there's no radio where there is on Apple Music. There's no like classical radio stations. Like you can't, there's no shuffle button if you play a song inside of the Apple Music Classical app. You have to listen to whatever it is in order. Jason said before, it doesn't support Apple Music Voice, so you have to have at least individual, well, a student works too. So student, I think, is $5.99. Individual is $10.99. And there's a couple of countries that are excluded, China, Japan, Korea, Russia, Taiwan, and Turkey, that have Apple Music but don't have Apple Music Classical. The big thing is that it's only on the iPhone right now. No iPad, no Mac, no CarPlay, no Android, no Apple, like none of that. So they do say that Android's coming soon. I have to assume all the Apple apps are coming soon as well. But right now, you need an iPhone if you want to listen to it.
I'm a little surprised there's no CarPlay when CarPlay is basically your iPhone's running the show there.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's a separate app, but it's kind of...
It's like a different view that your iPhone needs to show on your car screen, but it's coming from your iPhone, and your TV is basically an external display. So it's weird to me that they didn't build that when people listen to the music in the car is what they do. I understand why there's no shuffle. That's also something not a lot of people do with classical music.
Yeah, but you also don't have to use it. Like shuffle is such an Apple thing, an iPod thing, a music thing. It's just odd that it's not there. I mean, I think you're right about that. I think that classical musical people probably want to hear as intended the piece, the music, the songs and how they flow. It just seems odd that it would just not even be like an option if you don't want that. But you can listen to it in Apple Music and shuffle all you. As far as I know, and maybe Jason, you would know, I don't think anyone offers anything even close to this level of separation for their classical style. Like, I know you can find classical music on Spotify and other services, but this seems pretty, very unique if you're a classical music aficionado. Like, you're going to want this.
Yeah, I mean, that's why those people liked Primephonic, is because they were like, well, for classical music, which I care about, this is organized in a way that makes sense for me. I'm not aware of the other big streaming companies doing something like this, having a section where they let you sort by recording and composer and all the other stuff that, you know, matters. There may be other services like Primephonic. I wouldn't be surprised if they existed. I'm not aware of them, but this is instantly the big name in town, especially since you don't have to spend separate money. You also get Apple Music. Like if all you care about is classical music, you're going to spend your $10 a month and you're going to also get Apple Music.
I wonder what like a prior Primephonic subscriber would think of Apple Music Classical. I remember when Apple News Plus launched, and I don't remember the service that they bought, but Apple had bought a magazine service and basically turned it into Apple News, and people were like, this is not what I like. And I, you know, before it was a better... I wonder if Apple did it justice.
All I had seen before was the Primephonic subscribers upset that, like, hey, you said next year, where is it? I missed my classical music subscription. I haven't seen yet if they're happy with it because it's only been a day. That Apple News,
if you go to the
thing they bought, was called Texture.
Ah, right, Texture. Correct. Thank you. And it was a similar type of a thing, a kind of an all-you-can-eat monthly magazine service. But yeah, people didn't love it I got to admit, I like Apple News Plus. I never use, and our magazine is in there. And I never use it. Like, that's not what I use it for. I use it for news.
I don't use any of the plus features of Apple News. Like, regular non-pay Apple News is fine. And I don't use anything that comes with the plus level.
Apple also rolled out Apple Pay Later. This is the new payment program that's available through Apple Pay. It's being rolled out to randomly selected users over time. So not everybody can use it right now. It sounds like a beta, but they're not calling it a beta.
They call it pre-release, I believe. But yeah.
It's only the US, and there's about 5 states or so where it's not available.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's anything different than like Klarna. And there's a couple of these types of services that I think over the pandemic, but that was when they really kind of took off as a thing when people were buying everything online. It was announced at WWDC 2022 and only just now, and it's still not really out yet. But so what you do is say you buy something for $120, it divides it into 4 payments of, do my math, $30 each. So you pay $30 to start. 2 weeks later, you owe another $30. 4 weeks later, another 30, and 6 weeks later, another 30, and then you're done.
There are no fees. There's no interest or surcharge. I was looking around through all the terms and conditions and stuff, trying to find out, like it defaults to being auto pay, but you can go in right in the wallet app and like pay it off early or whatever you want to do. But what happens if you miss a payment? Like, it's Apple Pay, so it's only for retailers that support Apple Pay, so it's got to be backed by your credit or debit card, and they have to approve that purchase because you're technically taking out this little loan. I could not find what happens if you somehow miss a payment.
Klarna, which is the same thing, says, if we are unable to collect a payment on the scheduled date, we will try again. If that payment attempt also fails, the missed payment will be added to the amount of the next scheduled payment. Please note, missed payments and unpaid debts are sent to debt collection. Now, it's notable that Apple is handling all this. So there's a new Apple Finance LLC. They're the bank here. So if you miss a payment, like, Apple's the one who has to be the bad guy and come after you for your money or hire someone to do it.
Yeah, they'll turn it over to a collections agency. But they're backing these loans with their own giant mountain of money. Apple's sitting on how many tens of billions of dollars of cash. It's insane. But, you know, Apple Card is backed by Goldman Sachs and stuff, and there's all these regulatory things about interest accruing credit issuance and stuff like that. And so this isn't that. This is an interest-free loan, which is a little curious and interesting. But I also just kind of don't know who this is for. You're going to pay a quarter of it now and the whole thing within 6 weeks. If you're in that position where you can do that, or you will be within 6 weeks, wait 6 weeks. It just seems like if I have to make an emergency purchase from a vendor that only takes Apple Pay.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But these services are popular. This says, so I'm looking at Klarna again. Klarna made $1.42 billion in 2021, $80 billion in gross merchandise volume in 2021. 147 million people use Klarna in 2021. So that's a lot of people using these services. Yeah.
Is Klarna on the same timetable? Is it still six weeks you pay the whole thing?
It's the same. One up front, 2, 4, 6, yeah. It's, from what I can tell, identical. No interest, no late fees if you pay on time. But, I mean, they made $1.42 billion in revenue. So, clearly, it's a money-making institution.
Yeah, there's got to be – there's merchant fees or something. I mean, there's – and then, of course, whatever happens from people missing payments and – being late and I don't know what.
Again, the same article says, Klarna made over $1 billion in revenue in 2020. It charges merchants a 30-cent fixed and 3.29% variable fee on all transactions. That adds up.
Money-making opportunity for Apple.
Yeah, it's just interesting that they're the bank now. Like, that opens up a whole wide range of, like, not always great characteristics. We'll see. We'll see how this goes.
We've mentioned this before, but I really don't like that Apple's doing this, not because I think it's a bad service. This is not Apple's wheelhouse or what they're meant to do, and it just seems like they're doing it because they see a money-making opportunity and not because-
Yeah, I think that's almost certainly the case, yeah.
They're supposed to make money by solving people's tech problems. They're supposed to, like, democratize tech and make high technology accessible and available to people and enrich their lives through technology. And this doesn't do any of that. This is just another way to pay for stuff where Apple can skim some money off the top. And that's just feels icky. It feels like let other companies do this. This is not an Apple thing.
Like you could argue Apple Pay, even Apple Card fell under that umbrella of making things easier. I mean, I use Apple Pay all the time. It's fantastic. It changed the game. I agree with Jason, whereas this service is strictly a money-making scheme and in some ways predatory because, you know, it gives the illusion that you're spreading out a payment over something that you could afford. As Jason says, if you can't afford it, wait 6 weeks until you can afford it.
I mean, emergencies will happen, but they're not making all this money off of people who just like have an emergency payment. Whereas Apple Pay, like secure and easy mobile payments with your phone, that was definitely a technology problem to solve. That was definitely, let's make tech everyone's lives better through tech. That's not what this is. And I don't see an angle for that. I mean, it's nice that it's within wallet, but it's so lame that they're even doing it.
Apple's hoping will happen was that you'll use Apple Pay later to buy that new MacBook Pro.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I'm sure they'll promote it. They'll promote it for their own devices.
Already, you can buy stuff interest-free on your Apple Card for a really long time. I guess you don't have to apply for an Apple Card. It's different than applying for credit. Still, it's within 6 weeks. I just thought they're trying to find a way to make it look more affordable when they sell a $3,000 VR headset. Only four easy payments of $750.
No, I mean, and it does. There's a psychological impact there. The first time I saw Klarna was when I bought, I think it was my Peloton bike, I want to say 2018, 2017. And it was like, what, $2,000, $1,800, whatever it was. But when you see those four payments, like, oh, well, that's not so bad. I could pay that, but they come quick. 2 weeks is not a lot of time.
If you can pay something off in a month, you're better off putting it on a credit card and getting your points or your cash back or whatever you are, and then paying it off that month before the interest accrues. As popular as they are, there is kind of this narrow window of like, when is this a good idea?
I guess just to kind of wrap up this episode, there was some news about iOS 17 that it may have, as it was put, I believe, by Mark Gurman of Bloomberg, the release of iOS May 17 may include some most requested features.
That's all he really said. So this follows a report from a month and a half ago that said it wouldn't have anything, basically, where he said all of the resources had been shifted to the development of the headset and XROS, as it's been called, and that Apple had cut planned features from iOS 17 and macOS 14, which made sense. Okay, fine, I get that. But now all of a sudden they're like, yeah, they changed their idea, and there won't be any like major features, but there are going to be these quote unquote most requested features from users. And there's no specifics. He gives no example of what that could be, because he says there's no features on par with like the redesigned lock screen in iOS 16. So what user-requested features are small enough to be below that, but large enough to be most requested and haven't been added in 16 years?
What I read from his report was not that they're changing tactic with iOS 17. It's that they're changing the way they're presenting it to people. One is they shifted a lot of resources to the XROS. Two is they have to do a ton of work to comply with the EU's law about to allow things like third-party app installations outside the App Store and stuff like that, right? And that's probably only going to be for phones in the EU and stuff, but they've got to do a lot of work around that. And that meant not a lot of time for a big major feature. Instead of calling it like a maintenance release or focusing on speed and security and stuff, like that's not fun. Nobody wants to hear that. They're going out there with the message that, oh, it's got all these little things that you've wanted all this time. For example, like I'll give you an example. The app library. Like, I cannot stand how the app library has these auto-produced folders that move around and they change what's in them and things don't go in the folder that I think they should go in. But if you drag down on that screen or if you tap the little search box at the top, you get an alphabetical list. Well, maybe they just did the same thing they did on the Apple Watch where they give you the option to default to list view instead of the little bubbles. Well, maybe they do that on the app library. Maybe there's a option in options that says like the app library's default is list view. That's a little thing. That's not a giant thing, but that's a most requested feature. So I think it's going to be full of stuff like that. Maybe not that one. I hope that one.
His description of the features was quote unquote nice to have features. That would fall under that.
Things like people are still mad that there's no crossfade or whatever in Apple Music. That would be a tweak, you know, that they could do. If it's a lot of those little things, it's going to be a really popular version of iOS, because I think those little annoyances are the things that people often are so happy about. They feel like their phone hasn't changed on them. They just, you know, smoothed away a few annoyances. I don't think Apple is going to promote any of the stuff that they're required to do for the EU. Like, they're going to be required to have third-party payments in apps. They're going to be required to have a way to get apps on your phone outside of using the app store, whether that's sideloading or third-party app stores or whatever. I don't know. They're going to have to adhere to these laws. They're probably going to adhere to it in the minimal possible way and probably get sued for not going far enough and all this other stuff. But I don't think they're going to talk about that at all. When they get out there and talk about iOS 17, there's not going to be the first mention about like sideloading apps or anything. So that's a lot of work and a lot of like a big part of iOS 17, at least for people in the EU, that is just going to go completely unmarketed.
It would be interesting if that is a part of iOS 17 and they don't actually mention it. Like, I think they have to talk about it at some
point. It's going to be one of those things where when you look on the web page where they list like all the features, like all 300 features, App Store, under the App Store section, it's going to have something. So, but it's not going to be the thing that they say in their glitzy videos and get up on stage and talk about stuff. I don't think so.
Well, that does it for this episode of the Macworld Podcast, episode 834. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Jason Cross and Michael Simon about the latest developments in the world of Apple. A big thank you to our audience for listening. We appreciate your support and hope you found our discussion informative and engaging. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Macworld Podcast on your favorite podcast app, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We love hearing from our listeners, so please send us your comments and questions to podcast@macworld.com or reach out to us on Twitter @Macworld or visit our Facebook page. Be sure to tune in next week for more insights and discussions about the world of Apple. Thanks for listening.